Welcome to Legal Nurse Podcast, where you will get tips to expand your legal nurse consulting skills. Every week, you'll hear from experts from within and outside of legal nurse consulting. They will share their knowledge to help you grow. Your show is moderated by Pat Iyer, a legal nurse consultant with 30 years experience. So, join our community, sit back, relax, and get ready to learn. Here's Pat.
This is Pat Iyer with Legal Nurse Podcast. I have with me today Lisa Ortega, who is joining us from California. I'm sitting in my home in New Jersey, the wonders of being able to communicate with people across the country and around the world. Lisa is a nurse who has been involved in nursing for 13 years and pretty quickly in her career moved up into leadership positions. She's been in leadership positions for 10 years and in nursing administration for the last 4 years. Also, Lisa knows the faculty world. She's been involved in helping to teach RN BSN students, and she has her doctorate. Lisa is a legal nurse consultant who works on cases in a variety of different types of settings. Lisa, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Pat. Thank you for having me.
One of the challenges that I think that affects us as we think about the whole healthcare system is there's so many players with so many responsibilities and levels of commitment and communication that become vital when something goes wrong in a hospital. I've been involved as a medical surgical expert witness for 25 years reviewing cases. And often there's a question that arises of what did that nurse tell the supervisor or what did the nurse tell the head nurse and what are the responsibilities of those individuals when that happens? So I'd like to peel back a little bit and talk about today in 2021, what is the role of the nursing administrator?
Well, the nursing administrator is really responsible and accountable to all the care that's provided in their units or in the hospital. So that can range from everything from clinical policies and procedures, nursing practice, the oversight of nursing practice in the different environments, respect for the nurse's rights, responsibilities, other clinical staff in the units, implementation of evidence-based practices, relationships amongst the healthcare team. So like you brought up kind of that chain of command, how is that implemented? And then what is done about it? We definitely don't want a patient ever left in a situation where no one responds to the nurse who has a need. So it's very broad, but ultimately they're accountable for everything that's happening in that clinical setting.
And I know that when you layer on all of those nuances, what immediately our listener thinks about is that's a complex environment for sure that you're describing. And yeah. It is often a chain of command question, as I mentioned earlier. When you say that the nurse administrator is responsible, you know, let's take this situation where the staff nurse is concerned about a change in the patient's condition and the physician is not responding, or the nurse practitioner who's on call is not responding. What does that chain of command mean in terms of what resources that nurse has when faced with a lack of response, or maybe a response that doesn't seem to make sense or the nurse feels is not appropriate?
So the chain of command, there's multiple levels. So if we just start with the nursing aspect, when that nurse feels something is wrong or the order is inappropriate for the patient care, and cannot get a hold of the physician or is not getting agreement from the physician as they would like, they're definitely expected to elevate that to the next person. So directly on nursing, that would be the charge nurse, the first person to go to. And if the charge nurse is not effective in obtaining what needs to be done for that patient and is still concerned, then they would go up the nursing chain of command, the unit leadership, ultimately to the chief nursing officer if needed. So there's that piece, but there's also the piece that they escalate it on the physician side. So it's the nurse's duty to contact the physician. If they're not responsive, there is an additional physician. So if you're in a teaching facility, you might initially be contacting the intern or the resident and ultimately going up to the attending or the chief of that service, all the way up to the CMO. So it's expected that everyone involved in the situation escalate to make sure that there's no patient harm and that all the concerns are taken into consideration and validated, or there is a resolution that is agreed upon to prevent harm for that patient.
And I think one of the challenges is that when the nurse says to the physician, "I'm concerned about the patient," and the physician says, "She's fine. I've seen this before. There's no need for you to worry. Everything's cool. No need to do anything else. Just let her alone." How does that staff nurse or charge nurse deal with that type of resistance?
I think they have to, you know, you can work with your unit leadership or your clinical director, but you have to develop the ability to have conversations with the physicians. And if not, should know of person to contact. We do a lot of education with the steps in the medical staff to make sure that they are approachable, or there is always somebody you can reach out to. So if really the attending physician is not agreeable either, the administration, the CMO, is going to listen and then work from there and see what's happening. On our behalf, as a nursing administrator, we do a lot in meetings and so forth to develop those interpersonal relationships with the medical staff so that they do take the time to hear the concerns of the nurses, because the nurses are really the eyes and they see the changes in the patients. So it can take some time to develop, but we work a lot with the leadership teams to have that skill.
And that's a critical communication, because it saves lives when a physician is informed of a change and takes the appropriate action to order the diagnostic test or take the patient back to surgery or come in and examine the patient, whatever that action requires. Right. You've highlighted the amount of behind the scenes communication and teaching and mentoring. Often the people involved in the legal system have no idea that that's occurring. They just see the outcome. They see the bad outcomes.
Right.
I was frequently reminded when I was working all the time looking at cases that the vast majority of people who go to the hospital get better and go home, or they die. And nothing bad in the sense of a malpractice incident takes place. But we see, working in the legal system as legal nurse consultants, we see the horrible outcomes. And it's right. Easy to forget all those things that are going well as a result of the efforts that you're describing.
Right. There's a lot of work that goes into looking at every patient safety event and every potential harm that occurs. You know, we encourage our staff to fill out incident reports for every error that happens that they're aware of, or everything that even comes close to that patient. And we encourage those things so that we can look at the systems and constantly be perfecting or changing the system to the benefit of the patient.
Let's talk about some of the legal issues that nursing administration deals with. Can you give us a deeper insight on some of the problems that come up?
Sure. So we do have our cases of negligence or gross negligence. Are the staff or the nurses practicing to the expected standards of care? We have our Nurse Practice Act, but we also have state standards for general acute care hospitals. We have our Joint Commission standards. So there's lots of layers of standards in place that we look at. Recently, I have seen an increase in the number of cases or issues involving battery, assault, false imprisonment. We have a significant increase in the psychiatric patients that are coming to the hospitals and the behaviors of those patients. So sometimes it's patient related. We could have cases with one patient versus another in cases where they share rooms, or we also have a lot of staff injuries from patients with psychiatric conditions. So I think those are some big pieces of the legal issues that we deal with.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, I was thinking of that issue in my limited understanding of it being a concern in the ER, where there are a lot of people who come in who may be under the influence of substances and attack the ER staff. But I wasn't thinking about the psychiatric patients in the inpatient unit.
Yes.
Attacking the staff.
Yes. It's hospital wide these days. So nurses are trained, but it takes constant reminders. I mean, managing psychiatric patients is definitely different than managing our medical patients on the floor. So you have to be aware of the different potential events that can arise from that. Yeah.
I can remember having to call the security guards to come to a unit and intervene when people got out of control. And I've worked on several cases involving patient-to-patient assaults in particular, that have resulted in some serious injury. And then for you as the nursing administration, you've got a traumatized staff.
Correct.
Who know that one of their own has been injured by a patient. What kind of aftermath is available for those individuals?
We have started doing debriefings. We do follow-up. We do education with the staff to remind them of ways to protect themselves. We have also, we can bring in the sheriff's department just to do teaching because they have a lot of experience with those kind of people out on the streets. So I would say, though, our rates are even one case a day where we have a nurse being injured in some capacity.
Wow.
Yeah.
In your experience, is this an increasing number?
I would say it's increasing. There's definitely, and I have worked in large hospitals or pretty moderate sized hospitals in LA County. So we are a pretty high level, population. Mm-hmm. For, you know, we have a large population, a variety of patients that come to our hospitals. But we definitely have seen them increase. So we see a huge increase just with COVID and the alcoholism and drugs over the last year that are contributing to the psychiatric behaviors of patients. And the homelessness has significantly increased, and those are coming to our hospitals also.
I have read the statistics about the increase in depression, suicidal behavior, alcohol use, opiates, that has accompanied the lockdown that we've been dealing with for the last year plus months.
Yes. It is very sad.
Well, let's move on and think about when you've just outlined for us a whole variety of responsibilities for the nursing administrator working in a complex environment, can be emotionally charged, can have violence affecting the nurses. When you think about that background, what makes a nursing administrator an ideal person to work with an attorney within the legal system?
I think we have a very broad understanding of the complexities that are happening throughout the hospital, where as a bedside nurse, I knew what was happening to my patients at the bedside, but wasn't thinking of the broader scheme of things. You know, we see a lot of events that happen on transport from one unit to another, or might take place in the OR versus the ICU. And there's things leading up to those events that might have contributed to the decline of the patient. So I think having that broader perspective and then understanding the standards of care that should have been in place and were they in place to ask those additional questions. Did they use the chain of command? Was there timely communication? Were critical lab values reported in time? And where to find all those things? Because the truth is our medical records are still very fragmented. When I get a medical report from an attorney, it's usually just a basic printout of all the documentation, but there's so much that goes into it. When were medications withdrawn out of the PICSIS versus when they were entered on the MARAs being administered? Was there barcode scanning? Were things wasted in a timely manner? So there's a lot of things that aren't necessarily shown on a first pass at the printed documentation.
Mm-hmm. And I think one of the issues that I have seen that nursing administration has tended to get involved in is the questions around hiring. And say a staff member assaults one of the patients or sexually assaults a patient, often the finger gets pointed right back to who hired this individual, who interviewed this person, did this individual have a prior history of assault? Why did the hospital hire this person who has a history of having done something in another facility? Can you give us a little bit of insight into what should be done to try to prevent those individuals from coming into the healthcare system as employees?
Yeah, absolutely. And I actually have a good case on how we've managed that. We recently had something happen along those lines. But ultimately, we need to do our investigation on that candidate, ask them the questions that we ask in our interviews, compare it to their resume. You know, while we're asking questions, really decipher if they're qualified or if they know, you know, have they had issues in the past? Were they asked to resign in the past? Have they ever been terminated? Doing a thorough background check. Also going to the BRN websites to assess whether there's any cases pending against the licensure of that individual. When I say we had a case recently, nothing in the interview process stopped us from hiring somebody. Everything seemed legit. They went through the background check. Nothing came up with fingerprinting, live scan. But we had an individual who ended up being deposed for a different case and blurted out in the deposition that he had been fired elsewhere. And we immediately started looking into that and found out that that was in fact true, and learned about the conditions of that firing. And so now that person is on administrative leave and given kind of an opportunity to resign before we do terminate that person. But in no way do we want to keep somebody in practice that's a liability for us or for the patients.
Our listener might know about the Charles Cullen case. If you're from the Northeast, you've heard of this. He was a nurse who worked for 17 years in New Jersey and Pennsylvania, who killed a number of patients. And I got involved with one of the county prosecutors to help pinpoint one of the murders on him. The issue for us in New Jersey and Pennsylvania was that one facility was passing him on to the next facility without giving any information about any suspicions that they might have had about him. They simply said, yes, we can confirm that he worked for us, and these are the dates of his employment. And as a result of that case, Charles is now serving 7 lifetime sentences for the, it's hard to even calculate how many people he killed, because he testified that he killed a person on average about once a month, and he worked for 17 years. He got caught, by the way, because the computerized drug carts, which, you know, our listener may, particularly if he or she is working clinically, may sometimes be annoyed with the Pyxis systems because of the complexity, but they actually saved lives in this case, because they started, the data started showing that he was opening up drawers of patients he was not assigned to, and he was taking out digoxin and a number of other drugs, and then administering them to patients. Ultimately, that's what was proved. And the data ultimately caught him. So with that in mind, as a result of him, New Jersey specifically passed a law that said that you must give a valid, accurate reference when the next facility calls your hospital and says, tell us about this candidate. Whereas before, everybody was afraid of being sued for passing on negative information. And that allowed him to go from hospital to nursing home to hospital to hospital and just keep getting jobs, because no one was quite completely forthright in sharing their concerns about him. And there was nothing proven. There was even a son who observed Charles come in and give a drug to his mother on the day of discharge in her thigh. He witnessed this injection. The mother died shortly thereafter. The son insisted on her being removed from the grave and an autopsy done, but they didn't check for the drug that Charles used on this mother. It turned out, I think he killed her with digoxin, and they didn't test for that particular substance.
Okay. Well, they would have to know what to test for. And then I would be curious, was it even documented in the MAR if he was pulling it out under other patients' names? So it would be very difficult to determine what substance was actually inserted.
Before we continue the podcast, please spend a few minutes getting to know one of the guest speakers who will be presenting at our September 23, 24, 25, 2021 virtual Legal Nurse Consulting Conference. After you have a chance to meet this guest, we'll resume the podcast. Hi, this is Pat Iyer and Jerry Foster. Jerry is one of the speakers at our September 23, 24, and 25, 2021 Legal Nurse Consulting Virtual Conference. We invited Jerry to talk about brand strategy. Jerry, what are some of the key takeaways that our attendee will get from attending your session at the conference?
Well, the title of my session is How to Get Known, Get Found, and Get Paid, because you're in business to be seen, to be heard, and to make money. And the fact is that unless you have a profitable brand, you run the risk of having a broken business. And as a legal nurse consultant, it's so important, Pat, that you stand out in a sea of what are perceived to be what are called the same, because one nurse is no different than another nurse. So what I'm going to show you is how to overcome feeling challenged and feeling as if you're trying to figure out a way to differentiate yourself. I'm going to show you how to set yourself apart. And I know you may feel right now that you're not quite sure how. I'm going to get into the nitty-gritty of everything that you need to do and who you need to be so that your online marketing can work, so that any social media marketing you're planning can work. I'm going to equip you with the tools so that you can stand out, be noticed, and be remembered for offering something unique as a legal nurse consultant that they can only get from you.
What a promise, Jerry. I know that people will be fascinated to know the answer to that question.
Oh, my pleasure, because it's all about your brand. And even if your resources are slim, you're in the perfect place, because having an incredible brand is not about how much money you have or how much money you don't have. It's about outflanking and outmaneuvering and outthinking others so that you are the brand of choice. Because I want each person there who's going to know, who's going to attend, you will leave my program knowing exactly how to be looked upon as the go-to nurse, the authority, the person that they should seek for the skills and gifts that you offer. That's my promise.
All right. Be sure to sign up for this conference. And the link is http://lnc.tips/September2021virtual. The link is in this video, and we look forward to having you at the conference and you having an opportunity to get to know Jerry. This is going to be an interactive experience. You'll be able to ask him questions, and he will address your questions and give you pearls of wisdom on this topic of branding. See you there. Now you've had a chance to meet one of our esteemed speakers for our September 23, 24, and 25, 2021 Legal Nurse Consulting virtual conference planned by Barbara Levin and I for you. Be sure to get your seat reserved at this link, http://lnc.tips/September2021virtual. I'll see you there.
Yes, yes. I hired an intensivist who helped me with looking at the medical records. Charles would remove IV bags from the IV cart in the hospital, which we were looking at. He would inject them with something like 4,000 units of insulin and put them back on the cart, and then wait for somebody to come along and hang that bag, which had been removed from its overwrap. These were plastic IV bags. And as a result of concerns, the insurance company and the risk manager started telling people, don't use an IV bag that's not sealed inside its overwrap. And they had a number of people that were in our hospital, or meaning the case I was involved in, who died from insulin overdoses, and no one could figure out why their blood sugar went down. If it was supposed to be D5W, but it was loaded with insulin.
Wow.
So that's a long lead up to the question I wanted to ask you, and I know nurse killers are very unusual. I don't want anyone listening to this to think, you know, this is a commonplace. Oh yeah, you know, we take out people all the time. But in terms of, if you've got a concern as a nursing administrator, what kind of information do you feel comfortable now in light of today's environment passing on about a nurse who you have concerns about?
I think it does depend on your employer and what they're allowing you to share. Currently, though, when we have concerns about medication management or missing narcotics, I think that's a good one to bring up with the opiate crisis. If we cannot resolve that discrepancy to our satisfaction, and we notice it happens multiple times, it could be even be one or two times, we report it to our sheriff's department on campus, and we'll ultimately report it to the BRN if things do not add up or make sense. And really, for the protection of the individual, if they're, if they are drug seeking, maybe it's not along the lines of the nurse killers, but if there's drug seeking behavior, we want to protect them and share that information, because a lot of times these people will leave and go to another facility and get hired as they find out we're tracking them and on to whatever's happening. So we do pursue that. At another facility I worked at, we were allowed to share some information, and we would really state whether or not that person would be considered for rehire or not. Mm-hmm. So I think in California, there is still some protection about what we're allowed to share, but as much as using our regulatory agencies to assist with us, we do try.
And then for the legal nurse consultant who is looking at a case involving this question of, was there appropriate screening at the time of hire? Are there any tips that you can share with our listener that addresses what they should be thinking of in terms of an appropriate hiring decision?
We try to look at their overall background, but is there a lot of frequent movement? If somebody is not in a travel agency and they're moving around a lot, that would be very concerning. Travelers who change from agency to agency might be concerning to me. A lot of times if we have somebody that comes from an agency and we have issues with, we will say, do not send back. So we'll just keep those things on file. So if somebody was, you know, not working out for a travel agency, you'll see those individuals jump from job to job to job. And then I think there is a part of it that you have to decipher when interviewing and questioning candidates. And we have developed habits of having a lot more behavioral type questions and questions that show a candidate's personality and how they would manage situations versus some general questions that we used to ask on interviews.
Mm-hmm.
We do fingerprinting for all new individuals. That was waived for during the COVID period, but we are now going back and rescanning everybody that was not meeting those requirements that we had to hire during the pandemic. But you really want to make sure you stay on your hiring practices and meeting all of those expectations for every staff member.
I just went through last weekend having my fingerprints done to keep my Florida license. And one of the things that I didn't realize until the first time I got fingerprinted 5 years ago is that when you use your fingers as much as nurses do, sometimes your fingerprints are exquisitely difficult to capture.
Right.
And I must have fingerprinted this little finger about 17 times before I could figure out how to capture my prints. And there's this big warning that says, you know, the FBI might choose to disregard your fingerprints if they don't pass the quality test. And I thought, crap, I have to come back and do this again. Between using the computer keyboard and being a nurse, you end up wearing off your fingerprints to an extent.
Right. Yeah.
So older nurses run into this issue, maybe older physicians as well.
Something to look forward to.
Yes. Not something you have to worry about yet, Lisa, but you do when you're my age.
That's funny.
And the last question is the challenges that are posed by the regulatory agencies. One of the questions that can come up is, did the facility report an incident to the Department of Health or the whatever that equivalent name of that agency is in a particular state? Can you give us some insight on that reporting function?
Yes, definitely. California Department of Public Health, we have certain requirements for reporting injuries. If we have falls with injuries, depending on the level of the injury, those could need to be reported. If we have unstageable pressure ulcers, we have so many days to report. So it's our duty to do a thorough investigation on what happened, look at our documentation, was it adequate? Was this something that was started in the hospital or was it started outside the hospital? Really to list out everything that contributed or possibly contributed to that pressure injury. And then we self-report to the state. Upon self-report, the state will actually come out and investigate every single one of those cases. And so from there, the state could issue corrective action plans Or they can say, okay, you've met all the guidelines and you did everything that you could to have tried to prevent this. But the state does follow up on every single case that we self-report.
Is there anything else that you'd like to share with our listener in terms of tips from your perspective as the nursing administrator and as an expert witness in nursing administration?
I think really that there could be a lot of details that might not have been taken into account. Some of what a nursing administrator could do in a trial as an expert witness is speaking to what really the expectations were or could have been, and did the nurse or the caregiver meet all those expectations? Really, did the hospital have everything in place to educate that staff member and show that we did everything we could to prevent those injuries or that event from happening? So I think thinking in those kind of broader terms, or trying to think of the little details that might have interfered with the event or might have impacted the event that somebody's not necessarily looking at. We do a lot of root cause analysis. So asking why, you know, getting to the very root of the problem. And I think that's just a skill that we're ingrained with. We're always looking for the bigger picture as to why something happened.
Mm-hmm. How can our listener find out more about you and the services that you offer, Lisa?
So I have a website, ortegaandassociates.com. It's ortegaandassociates.com. So just spell out the and. And then there is a contact us link, and you can put any information in the contact us link and we will reach back out to you.
Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you.
I appreciate you sharing your knowledge and giving us insight into some of the many challenges that are associated with functioning as a nursing administrator in today's environment.
Thank you for having me.
And for you who's been listening to this program, be sure to leave a comment. If you're watching this on our Legal Nurse Business YouTube channel, leave a comment below. Give us a thumbs up or a thumbs down. Tell us what you think about the program. And if you're watching this on YouTube, you'll get those comment options. If you're listening to this, please give us a review and share Legal Nurse Podcast with another Legal Nurse consultant. And be back next week when we have a new program, new show. Thanks.
Thank you.
This is Pat Iyer with Legal Nurse Podcast. I have with me today Lisa Ortega, who is a nursing administrator in California. And we've just finished a half an hour fast race through some of the issues that affect the administration of healthcare in today's environment. Lisa, what were some of the topics that we touched on?
Today we talked about the nursing administrator role, what their responsibilities are in their role. We talked about some common legal issues that impact or involve nursing administration. We did talk a little bit about the increase that we see with violence in the workplace and really violence on healthcare providers and staff. We also talked a little bit about self-reporting. When we do have incidents that happen in the hospital and there is a severe outcome, we self-report and follow up with the state. And then I think we also touched on hiring tactics and interviewing to make sure that we have high qualified staff without concerns providing care at the bedside.
There are so many factors that touch on nursing administration and the role of the administrator in some of the medical malpractice cases that legal nurse consultants are involved in. You'll be sure to want to hear Lisa Ortega's podcast as we talk about an aspect of nursing that covers the whole building and beyond. Thanks so much.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Check out Pat Iyer's resources for legal nurse consultants on legalnursebusiness.com. Pat coaches legal nurse consultants so they make more money, get more clients, and avoid expensive mistakes. Check out her coaching program at lncacademy.com. Please subscribe to our podcast and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Join our community to get notified of each new episode and to receive the transcript of today's program. Complete the request form on podcast.legalnursebusiness.com. We appreciate you and your interest.